You're with SBS Radio.
We are speaking with Senior Curator of Indigenous Art at the National Gallery of Victoria, Judith Ryan AM. Thank you for accepting the interview, Judith.
Oh, that's my pleasure.
Judith, what is the exhibition looking at?
Well, Marking Time is looking at the earliest forms of marking on public faces in Indigenous Australia. That is the ephemeral ochre figurative images on rock, the petroglyphs, the markings on the ground and on the body and on ritual objects. It looks at these and the way that Indigenous artists are translating those amazing images that belong to their ancestors into new materials, so that new art forms have come about from the early years of the 20th century to now. A great modern art movement has sprung up that we have certainly witnessed that is now being shared across the world, because once the images were rendered permanent, first on bark, then on composition board, then on canvas, on neon, on street walls, or whatever surfaces the Indigenous artists wanted to use, they then became known to a much broader audience than the first designs that were made in their own communal context, initially for ritual or on cave walls, on the ground, on the body, on objects, on carved trees and so on.
As you're saying, some of these artworks are documenting the body paintings to save them for future generations. This is a new concept though, isn't it, in the Indigenous culture, because before people didn't preserve these arts, they just painted on the body and then it would be washed at the end of the ritual.
Yes, that's right. It would be smudged after ceremony. The ground designs would also be covered up and it was not to be seen by the uninitiated. But once there was contact with others, with Gadia, non-Indigenous people in the Western Desert or in Ballinda in Arnhem Land, Indigenous people saw the need to make these images known, to share their culture, to assert the importance of it with the colonisers, because this was a means of holding on to culture and passing it on to the next generation as well.
And how was it accepted at start?
Well, there was a great deal of interest. People who came to Australia to colonise this country, when they encountered Indigenous people and they saw their cultural objects, there was a fascination in this and they were interested in souveniring such things. When they visited the Tiwi Islands and they saw the Pukamani Tiltini, the big installations of Pukamani poles, or they saw people painted with body designs, or they saw and witnessed people dancing in a ceremonial context, or they saw cave art, rock art, they became fascinated. When George Gray saw the first paintings of Wandjina in the northwestern central Kimberley in 1830 and published them in a scientific paper, people across the world were fascinated and mystified by these images. So when Baldwin Spencer in 1913, as the second chief protector of Aborigines in the Northern Territory, was in Western Arnhem Land and saw the rock art at Kakadu and also the wet season dark shelters, he asked the people there, the Kru people, to replicate the figurative images he saw on the rock on sheets of bark, for which he paid them in sticks of tobacco. And these paintings then came down. They were gifted to the then National Museum of Victoria, where they remain. But these were the first paintings on individual sheets of bark that were actually made in Indigenous Australia. And that's not all that long ago, really, in human time, when you think of the designs on rock going back to beyond 60,000 years BP.
The rock faces and shelters throughout Australia bear markings of painted figures and sematic signs and symbols. And I was wondering, do we understand all of that now? Do we know what it means?
Yes, because there are Indigenous people who are able to interpret the designs and the figurative images that are found on rocks. And also, not only interpret them, understand them, but also share these images on bark or on canvas or in other materials. And this is really the huge revolution that has occurred in Indigenous Australia.
To share art with people who are not initiated.
Yes, and to share with outsiders. The exhibition encompasses works across media, different media, because it begins with the figurative paintings on bark and the sculptures that relate to Arnhem Land, Western Arnhem Land and the northwestern central Kimberley. And then we progress to the Western Desert and we look at the work that was made at Papunya initially in 1971-72. This is a very different form of painting, a very different visual language. It's non-figurative, it's mainly abstract, geometric, concentric circles, travelling paths, dots that relate to people of the Western Desert who were living at Papunya, a government settlement established in 1959. And here in 1971-72, in a revolutionary moment, they transferred men's ritual body designs and ground designs and paintings and on shields and sacred objects onto small squares and rectangles of scraps of composition board. And these then came into a public marketplace, were brought into Alice Springs for sale, and no one had ever seen these designs in public before. And when eventually they were seen and understood, people looked at them, saw connections with modern art movements, abstraction and so on, abstract expressionism and so on, and they regarded these works as works of art, not ethnographic artefacts, which the bark paintings and the small sculptures had been seen and the ritual objects had been seen as. So this was a great step forward for Indigenous art, and it was also that the transition was made to using introduced materials, acrylics, enamel paints and sheets of composition board. They were not painting in organic materials on sheets of stringy bark. And then the transition was made to large canvas. So this was a very different form of art from what had been experienced in Australia before 1971.
In one of the rooms, you're also talking that the room is revolutionary because the art is made by women.
Yes.
Is that something that was not happening before?
No, it wasn't happening. We held a huge exhibition in 1981 called Aboriginal Australia, 381 works. I worked on this exhibition for 3 years. It was held at the gallery and then travelled interstate. There was not one work in that exhibition by a woman. This was in 1981. Now, you couldn't curate an exhibition of Indigenous art now that did not include the work of Indigenous women. But this change came about very gradually and not until the 1980s. And largely instrumental in this was the step at Yondamu in the Western Desert, where they formed an art centre, Wallagalungal, in 1985, and 50% of the artists were women and 50% were men. Now, this was a huge step forward because at that time, women were not given an opportunity to paint in their own right with some acrylics in the Western Desert, and very few were painting on bark in Arnhem Land. I mean, that change has really come about the early years of this century, in the 21st century. So in the exhibition, we have a women's own room, and these are the works made by the Walpri women of La Jemanu, a community a long way north of Alice Springs, which was established by the Native Affairs Branch of the federal government in 1949. And the women there, the senior women, approached the principal of the La Jemanu community school, which was bilingual and bicultural, and asked them if they could paint a series of works to be used in the classroom, so that they could teach their children and grandchildren their jukapa, their dreamings. And such was the artists, the women's enthusiasm, that they painted 55 works on cardboard in one afternoon. They were using poster colour and powder colour from the school art room, and they were painting the body designs for their own Yawalyu ceremonies, so that they could share these with their children and grandchildren. Also, they were painting sacred sites, sacred name sites, the travelling paths, the Gurrawari, the signs and markings of ancestral beings in a cultural landscape. These works are very, very different in feeling from the men's paintings from Laja Manu, which are also displayed with the Papunya works in the exhibition. The men's works on huge sheets of composition board in enamel and acrylic are very bold, they're very loud, but the women have a gentler form of iconography, and it relates to caring for country, caring for kin, and nurturing the landscape, nurturing families, and gathering foods at a number of special places and coming together and sharing them in after ceremony. So these are quite special, these works, and we have nearly all of the ones that were acquired after I visited Laja Manu in 1988.
What a change it has been like since only the 1980s and now, because one of the rooms is contemporary art and it's very modern and uses different media, isn't it?
Yes, look, I think the break with natural ochres and bark paintings that occurred in 1971 at Papunya, it sort of freed the way for Indigenous artists across Australia to be daring, to break with tradition, and also to have freedom to invent. Instead of just having red, yellow, black and white natural ochres, earth pigments, artists had the freedom to range right across the spectrum. They could use any colours. They could use the green that is part of what they see in nature. They could use blue if they wanted. There was no one sort of confining them to the expectations of an Indigenous palace, which was something that the first Papunya artists faced, because people didn't really accept what they produced. They didn't understand the dots and they didn't understand the acrylic colours either, and the fact that these works were not on bark. And because Papunya Tula work found a ready audience and was greatly admired and considered as art, this really provided a green light for artists in city contexts as well. There was a huge Koori art movement stimulated by Bumali in Sydney, where H.J. Wedge, an important artist in this exhibition, was working. We also saw Proper Now in Brisbane, a very important studio where artists like Gordon Hookey, Richard Bell, Vernon Arkey are working. We had Lynn Onus working strongly in Victoria, the Yorta Yorta artist. And of course, Brooke Andrew, Wiradjuri artist Brooke Andrew, and the Milroy artist Rico Rennie, who grew up in Footscray in Melbourne. They were artists who were inspired to continue to use the diamond designs incised on shields and on dendroglyphs, and to use them in ways that were more similarly found on city streets. For example, they liked to use neon. Rico began as a street artist. So we saw these designs coming into city contexts, and we also saw them prominently displayed on gallery walls in very modern idioms used by contemporary artists across the world. So it has been a revolution. You're right. Everything has changed.
Is there something that stayed the same, something that carries across?
Oh, yes. I think that the designs stay constant, because Rico, in using, might translate an incised marking of a diamond into neon, and he might emblazon it on a city wall, but the design itself is the expression of his Gamilaroi ancestry. Past, present and future are permanently linked and shared with us across time and across space. That is really what this exhibition is all about, how the old becomes new and survives into the future and takes a new form.
And I guess taking it online is yet another form to share it with other people, like who couldn't possibly travel to Melbourne before.
Yes, because this is the way forward. because not only in times of COVID-19, but at other times as well, people in Perth, people in Sydney, people in Darwin or in Brazil, they mightn't be able to get to the NGV and visit the exhibition, but now they can look at it online, they can have a virtual tour, they can also access the Indigenous works in our collection at any time. They're available, they're pictured online. This is also available for Indigenous artists in communities who live a long way away from Melbourne. They can see their own work at any time of the day or night and don't have to book flights or come down on the train. So I think really that this is a way that we want to work to share our culture, our visual culture, our collection with the broadest possible audience. It's the way to go.
Says Senior Curator of Indigenous Art at the National Gallery of Victoria, Judith Ryan AM. Thank you so much, Judith.
Thank you very much.
Want to hear more stories like this? Listen on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts from.